Okay. Welcome to episode 15 of the Bobbycast. Appreciate you guys being here. Eric Pasley is our guest. Number one song as an artist, number one songs as a songwriter. Eric Pasley will be our guest today. Appreciate you guys being here. By the way, we would not be able to do this without our sponsors, especially Blue Apron. Blue Apron, thank you so much. And not all ingredients are created equal. Listen, if you're cooking and you use crappy ingredients, you're going to make crappy food. Also, I'll say that you can fool people with Blue Apron because you can act like you cooked something amazing and they have no idea because it's like home-cooked meals. Listen, fresh, high-quality ingredients make the difference. For less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron has seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients. So you can make the home-cooked meals, and they give you the card, too. And I use the card, and if I ever cook, people are like, dang, I don't really cook that much. But when I do, I use Blue Apron, and I trick everybody. They know that when you cook with the best ingredients, you make the best meals. Like, and people always say I say meals and not meal. That's the thing that when people call in, they're like, hey, your accent. And I heard it today, by the way, on the air. I was talking about meals or meal. It sounds like I'm saying meals. Like, my stepdad worked at a sawmill, but it's a meal. I said meal. I went to speech pathology for like 4 years, and I tell you, I lost my. I mean, I used to say, like, if I would go fishing, I'd go fishing. Or I go walking down the road, it's walking, but meals is still the one that. So, anyway, you get meals. You get meals from Blue Apron, yes. Lots of variety, very flexible, very easy. Check it out this week. Go to blueapron.com/Bobby. This says /Bobby Mills. Is this a different one than the other one? Mike, do you know? Do you think so? Well, blueapron.com/Bobby Mills. Or /Bobby. I don't know. You will love how good it feels. Taste it. Create home-cooked meals. blueapron.com/Bobby Mills. M-E-A-L-S, not M-I-L-L-S. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Okay, I've just been told, for your first 3 meals for free and free shipping, it's blueapron.com/Bobby Mills. B-O-B-B-Y-M-E-A-L-S. Okay, Bobby Mills. There you go. All right, in the house now with Eric Pasley, who got to watch a few minutes ago me take a needle to the arm. I was taking a food allergy needle.
That's whatever you want to call it, Bobby. That's, yeah.
For you,
I knew it.
So here, let me explain what happened, because the nurse was supposed to get here at 5.
Yeah.
And Eric was early, which is awesome, by the way. I love someone who's early.
I've only the early for you.
So the nurse, if you want those headphones right there, put those on, because we're going to play some music in a second. The nurse shows up at 5, and Eric shows up at 5 too, Eric and his wife, Natalie. And Natalie's sitting in the corner with Dusty right now. So Dusty, for once, is not sleeping on the couch during this. So the nurse starts shooting a needle into my arm. Luckily, it only took one time, because I've passed out before.
Does it usually take a bunch of times?
Sometimes they can't find a vein.
That sucks.
It does. And they're like, oh.
Like, I'm a diabetic, and putting a needle in my arm is still not. Like, that's so unnatural. Like, see, like, you guard that area.
So
for a good reason.
I'm going to get to that, because you were watching and you didn't care. And she's drawing out blood, but your wife was staring at all of the blood. And then she would cover her eyes, then she would stare again. Usually, it's you don't look or you look.
Yeah.
You don't stare and then run away and then come back
and then
and
her
stare.
Eyes would water. And I'm like, stop staring. He's going to pass out because of the look on your face.
I'm doing this because Amy on the show said it told her what food. First of all, you learn what allergies you have, like in the air. And then what foods irritate your body. So I would have never done this, but Amy made me spend money on this thing. So, but you're here, and you have to shoot yourself with a needle. When?
Well, I wear an insulin pump, so every three to four days. Well, it's like a little bitty. It's basically like having a tiny little like IV in you. I mean, it's probably like a centimeter deep. It just barely goes under your skin. I mean, you put a needle in with it, pull the needle out, and this little just plastic tubing stays under you.
What part of your body?
I put it on my butt.
So it's
top of my butt.
It
cheeks,
stays
man.
There right now, like it's on there right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's basically just where I don't have to carry around like a vial of insulin and a syringe. I always have an insulin pump where it's just basically like having an IV of insulin hooked up to me. And so when I eat, I can say, okay, I ate 30 grams of carbohydrates. I'll give myself this amount of insulin. And it frees you up from having to carry around You're just always connected to
it. You have to monitor that, too. You show me a watch. You're not wearing it right now.
No, but dude, this is wild. So I have it's on my arm right now. It's called a Dexcom, like CGM, and it goes straight to my phone.
And it tells you what, like, your level, right?
Let's see.
You've shown me. We sat at dinner.
I'm at 167 right now.
And
literally on my phone.
It's so much crazier than always having to check it because you can always just tell.
Yeah.
When you perform, do you keep something on stage with you?
Yep. We always have a good old solo cup of like OJ up there.
And do you feel it if you're performing?
Well, what happens is my tour manager can watch this thing on his phone. And now he can too, which is cool. But just the other night we were in Philadelphia. And he was like, dude, your blood's going down.
So he's watching this telling
you. He's watching it and then just tells me in my in-ear monitors, like, hey, drink some orange juice. So the crowd thinks I'm getting wasted. And they're like, yeah, chug. I'm like, yeah.
You ever been playing on stage and you started to really feel down?
I haven't since I've gotten this thing as much, but because we catch it before I even feel the symptoms of being low. But I've definitely had some... I need some orange juice now. I mean, there's been times. I think we were at the Dusty Armadillo once. It was like, anybody, orange juice? And kind of stutter a little bit. Maybe they just think I'm sort of wasted.
So needles aren't a thing for you? Like, you don't care? It's nothing to you at this point?
I mean, I still don't like my blood being drawn.
Like in your
like
arm?
You just said? No,
you're taking
man.
Your butt all day, though?
That's let me tell you.
So Eric Paslay decided to hang out with us. Today on episode 15 of the Bobbycast, and we appreciate that. We got a lot to talk about. So I want to start with right now. We like to make a circle and start with exactly what's happening right now and then kind of back up and then come back to now. So right now you have a song out, and you want to talk about it for a second?
Yeah, Angels in This Town.
Here you go. This is Angels in This Town right here. So let's talk about the frustration, first of all, that I have that the song, as of right now, at this point, isn't doing better because it's a wonderful song, and I've loved it since you brought it in the first time, and I've played it, and I have a frustration, so I can't imagine what your frustration is right now.
You know, I was talking to a friend, and he was like, you know what? All we can do is plant and water. I can't make things
grow. You
can mulch.
And you can hire better farmers.
And hire farmers. No, I know. What I've been doing from the moment I knew, hey, this song's going to be a single, I was like, you know what we could do? Let's do these angel visits. And I didn't call them that. That sounds like, doing angel visits. They just somehow fit on a calendar.
I feel
well.
Like that's what this is tonight.
But it's great.
An angel visit at my house.
Right?
What
Here
think,
we
Mike?
Are. Yeah. My wife's an angel, so they are.
So.
But it's just... Go out and just thank people that we think are doing miracles in people's lives. And that's what we do. We were at Children's Hospital the other day. Almost 2 to 3 times a weekend. Almost every show day, we go do an angel visit. So tons of Habitat for Humanity builds. Just getting to thank all those people. Building houses for people just so they can afford a house. And it's just cool seeing a whole community come together.
Like, I know you're a good guy. That. And I'm just frustrated that this song... Like, what's the whole, why did they tell you the song right now isn't a top 10 song? Like, what did they tell you as the artist? Because I'm in people's ear all the time. I'm just telling you. I'm like, wait, why don't we plan this song
more? All of radio's saying we love it. Well, we need to find room because there isn't room right now.
There's always room for good stuff. There's always room for, and you don't have to say anything. Here, this is what it is. So let's talk about like a highway. Okay. You have all these cars on the highway, and this is the analogy of music and artists that I make. You have a highway, and there's 4 lanes, and it's packed. The cars are just flying through. Those cars are YouTube, the radio, apps, everything, right?
Yeah.
And so they're all out there, and the songs and the artists. And unless you're like a 1920s old crazy car or Ferrari, you know, those are the different platforms, the kinds of cars.
Yeah.
And then you have the speeds of the cars. Who gets noticed? The car's going really fast.
Right.
Or really slow. And so there's so many things out there, but it's all the time. So when someone always says there's no room for something, I never believe. You should never believe that.
I don't believe
them. I'm telling
them.
You
it's
should never believe
them.
Like, this is me from the inside saying never believe right. that crap. Because it's crap. It's just crap.
No, I believe in great songs, and I've never given radio a crappy song. And I've never given my fans a crappy song. You asked frustrations. Frustrations are that we can't really say a whole lot in songs these days. It's like the only way you're allowed to say humble and kind is if you're a Tim McGraw. You know, I try to write. I've always loved songs that have a message, but I also love songs that just have fun, like High Class, you know.
Which is another. I'm so frustrated.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, I think I always say it takes a lot more power to roll an actual stone made out of stone as opposed to made out of plastic. And I believe I'm made out of something heavier than some other songs, and that's all right.
Well, yeah. The song is Angels in This Town, which, by the way, you're on the Today Show playing it next week.
Yeah, we're rocking with Hoda and Kathy Lee.
Which, by the way, you're going to love them. They're so nice.
They're like, super
they
cool.
They had no reason to be cool to me. And they were cool to me before the show, during the show, and after the show. An hour later, I saw Hoda eating. She was like, do you want to come have lunch? And I couldn't because we were flying. But they were the nicest people. That's cool. Here, everybody download Angels in This Town. This is Eric Pasley right here. The whole song's about... like there are people watching over you, right?
Yeah, man. We were just talking about those stories that make your hair stand on end. You know, like that's not true. There's no way that's true. And one of the first stories I ever heard like that, and I've never had anything personally that I know of.
That's the thing.
See?
That we know of. And this is why you should be kind to people, too, for the same exact reason. You have no idea how many people have been kind to you, and you have no idea they were kind to you. Mm-hmm. And you should be kind to other people, even if they don't know, because you owe it back.
Yeah.
The same way our lives have probably been on the edge 10, 12, 15 times. We have no idea.
You never even knew it. Yeah.
Like, I always wonder, like, I'm not weird about it, but I was wondering about my grandma.
Yeah.
Because before she died, I was like, hey, if you're, like, really watching over me, like, let me know. And I had this whole thing where her guitar fell in my house, and it really freaked me out.
I remember reading about it in your book.
It was so weird.
And I also told you, I was like, man, you shouldn't be freaked out by, like, people watching you, because if they are, they're all good.
But then
they
watch me use the bathroom,
well,
and I don't
fine.
Like that. They watch me, you know, when I'm alone.
They're in such a cool place, they're just
I'm
like,
saying,
ah, whatever.
That's the part of the body. It's not that they watch me over me. It's like, I wonder if they check out while I go number two, or while, you know, I, like... make Bobby happy.
They're probably just grin and go, Bobby.
That's the part that freaks me out.
Silly Bobby.
Angels in This Town is the current song.
I don't know.
Do you think, and this is a real question that I've wondered about you, because you are one of the most cerebral people that I know, period. Do you think you're ahead of it a little much? Because being behind it and being ahead of it are two things will keep success from happening, and sometimes we don't even realize people were ahead of the game until it gets up there. Do you feel like you're ahead of it a bit?
I mean, I put She Don't Love You out, and no one had put ballads out, and then everybody put a ballad out.
Dude, absolutely.
I don't know.
Yes.
I mean, the honest truth is, this is the truth, I've always dreamed of playing the CMAs or the ACMs or the Grammys, geez. Because I always love watching it and being inspired by the songs and the performers. And I've always wanted to do that. I feel like I'm such a part of the country community now that I just want to play songs like Angels or like Less Than Whole or Deep As It Is Wide or songs like that that I've put out, She Don't Love You, where I believe it inspires all of us that create music, because it goes like, yes. Because it's those type of songs are have so many influences that I think affect all people that create, you know, to where it reminds you of that old McGraw song or George Strait song or Bob Dylan song or Petty song or who knows what.
Just a little ahead of everybody else.
I'll slow it down. I'll just wait. I'm
going
to wait for everybody to catch up.
More of this.
Thanks for thinking that.
When I grow up. More of this.
See, we need to do When I Grow Up and Potty Party.
Yeah, so Eric and I, and also, like, we wrote When I Grow Up with Phil Barton. And
yeah.
So this one, and I
the
swear,
Aussie.
This is the thing with Eric. This is not an exaggeration at all. He was way too smart to write When I Grow Up. And he came into the house, and he's like, okay, let's get into the minds of these kids. Like, what would you be thinking? And I was like, Eric, whoa. Come down to my level, the dumb level, like the total dumb guy level. And so it was like, I don't know, dude, I think you're like two steps ahead of everybody, like in your brain. You create these things not even just music, but we wrote When I Grow Up, right?
It was fun.
It was great. And then we wrote Potty Party with Lindsay L.
I'm like, I actually am just thrilled to death that I was part of children's songs and they don't suck. It's great.
That's my official take on you at this point, is that you're a little ahead of everybody else.
And it's gonna, well, I'll just take a break for like 6 months.
You don't need a break.
Let people to catch up.
There's a history.
I'm going to go fishing and building more cabinets and stuff. I'll just build a bunch of lights for all my friends.
You do build like crazy. And Eric's like artistic builder too. Like, he doesn't just build a deck. He builds a deck with EP on it for Eric Paslay that rotates at night. And also throws candy to all the kids as they walk by. Like, that's the kind of stuff that he does.
I actually haven't done that. That's slightly creepy. It sounds like I should be in a clown costume or something.
So, right now it's Angels in This Town. I'm rooting for the song like crazy.
Thanks, buddy.
Who'd you write this with?
I wrote this with Eric Dillon and Corey Crowder. We were down in Gulf Shores, Alabama. And I got to say, we were sharing those stories that make your hair stand on end. My brother was dating a girl. He didn't marry her or anything, but her story was she was in this insanely horrific car accident, and like to the point where she was going to bleed to death. Her head like hit a telephone pole or something. Like, her car was spinning out, insane. Like, should have died on contact, honestly. First person to the scene was a doctor. Second person to the scene was a volunteer firefighter who had a giant emergency kit in his truck. So, like, the biggest emergency kit you could possibly have as, like, just a civilian. Well, as a firefighter, I mean. So he brings that over. The doctor bandages her head up and everything so she's not going to bleed to death, and does it so perfectly that when she got medevaced to the hospital, all of the nurses and doctors were like, "Who did this? This was literally as perfect as you could possibly do it. And how did he even do it in like on the field beside a highway?" Like, no clue how this happened. But they never found the doctor. There was no car left. And the volunteer firefighter stood with all the sheriffs to identify who the cop was, because he's the first. They need a statement. I mean, he worked on the patient and he was there first, and no one recognized him. No one ever saw him again. And the girl believed it was an angel. And so did the firefighter.
They still don't know who it is?
But like, hands down, the firefighter and even the sheriff was like, "This was a miracle. We never found the guy. No one knows who he is.
Hold on a minute."
And he bandaged you up perfectly.
So no one ever found the doctor?
Never.
He did that.
He literally just was there, helped her, and just vanished.
So maybe he wasn't even a real doctor. You're saying he was an angel.
I mean, could have been an angel, you know, a miracle.
That's a crazy story, though.
Another story that we shared.
That's a crazy story.
Which there's some darkness to this, too, but it's still just like, whoa. Like what I was saying earlier, like times that you didn't even know something happened. The story is, and I've checked up on this. Some people say it actually happened. Like, there's a police report and everything. And a case that this happened, and other people are like, "Well, I don't know if it happens," but it inspired us to write the song. And the story was that a girl was at like a party that a few blocks from her house. It was at night. Party was done. High school girl, and she was like, "Hey, I'm just gonna walk home." And the parents were like, "Well, we'll drive you." And she's like, "No, I'm fine. I'll just walk home. It's fine." Nice neighborhood. Walking in down the alley, kind of where all the garages are on both sides. Walking down the alley back to her house, and there's a guy leaning there on one of the garages, and she just, like, freaked out and just was like, "Lord, please protect me, please protect me." She just started praying and praying and just walked right past him, went home, went to bed. And the next morning she woke up, and there was, like, police everywhere. And a girl had been murdered on that street, like, in the alleyway that night. And that the guy leaning on the garage was the dude that did it. They caught him. And the girl's like, "He totally was back here. I saw him." And the police asked the murderer, like, "Why would you pick the second girl and not the first girl that walked by you?" And he looks at him like, I'm not going to pick a girl with two big guys walking with her."
And there were no guys walking with her.
She's walking alone. But that guy saw two giant guys walking with her.
That's what he said?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So that's where Angels kind of got inspired by. And also there was... I remember
it sucks. Someone got murdered.
No, I know. And that's the hard thing about it. It's like, you don't know why God sends miracles sometimes and not other times, but the fact that he does it all, if you believe in God, is above and beyond anything, any love you'll ever know.
Do you ever think the struggle, though, is put here so when you do finally hit, you feel it and respect it more? Like, do you feel like at times...
Absolutely.
Your stuff doesn't work on purpose?
Absolutely. Because I know that I had nothing to do with it to a point. You know, like this morning I did a radio interview. And a lot of times I'm asked, God, why do you keep giving away your hits? You know, from the songwriting side, which I write everything and I hope, you know, and you want everything to be heard. And that's impossible because there's not, I mean, I've written 1,300 whatever some odd songs, which is just wild. But I always tell them, it's like it's not a hit unless it's played a lot. That doesn't mean it was the greatest song ever. Hopefully it really connected to people's memories and it's a great memory in their life. But if it gets played a lot, it's a hit. You know, there's a lot of songs that you and I know that might not ever even be heard by the public, and there's no way for them to even tell you if they think it's a hit or not because they never heard it.
Song.
Yeah.
So let me talk about She Don't Love You for a second. So she don't love you, she's just lonely. She don't know another way. So while Friday Night was out, and as it was climbing up the charts before it hit number one, I was like, man, you got to put She Don't... I wasn't talking to you. I was telling everyone. I was just screaming at the world. Like, She Don't Love You is one of the best songs I've heard in years.
Dude, thanks.
I was just... I was annoying. I was really annoying
thanks
about it.
Thanks for championing it, man. I mean, you led the way with making sure a ballad got heard by a new guy.
And I knew it was tough for ballads, but I was like, the song is so good. So it comes out, right? And she don't love you, she's just lonely. Listen, I thought it was Song of the Year. In my mind... Well,
we got nominated,
you did,
man.
And I voted for you.
That was one of the biggest, you know, tip of the hat to the song was... I mean, for... And I don't know where we got, like 15 or something. It was like top five in most markets, but it was... You know, to go up against where you think about how many 40 some odd number ones that year to be one of the top five chosen for Song of the Year, that just meant the world to us. And
let me ask you a question. Here you go. Here's the question. Because wherever it peaked on the radio chart, which don't know where it peaked. Do you know where it peaked?
I think like 15.
Okay. So would you rather have had it be a 3-2-1 and not be nominated for Song of the Year, which it was, or like it happened, Song of the Year? Let's not even say number one. Let's say number two. So,
right.
Okay? So let's take number one out of it.
Right. The numbers you hate, 11, 6, and 2, because yes, they were almost a 10, almost a 5, and almost a 1. Yeah.
So would you rather have been a number two song on the chart and not be nominated, or be nominated for Song of the Year and peak at 15 on the radio chart?
I'm fine with how the story went, because every night people sing along, the fans sing along, and that's the main point. It's not that it went. I mean, it's nice to give your co-writers a pat on the back as well and go, here's a plaque for a number one. But it means everything when you're the singer every night and you go out and you sing and people sing along and you go, wow, this was a hit. You know, and it was a hit.
It was a huge people hit. Like there are songs that have been multi-week number ones that will never be remembered and thought of again. And She Don't Love You is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be able to sing this forever. And people, I remember when you came, and we don't get to go and do stuff on the weekends. Like, we barely get to see each other play because we're both out
playing other places. I always say that. I was like, I never get to see shows.
And so you came and played at our Ryman show last year, and you did She Don't Love You by yourself. And it was just really one of the most moving things that I've seen. Just an artist go up by themselves and play that song. It was very powerful.
Thanks.
And so congratulations. And when I was nominated for Song of the Year, I was surprised because I knew it didn't make, you know, it wasn't in top five song.
I was dancing around the bus, man.
I was so happy.
Wow.
And Jen Wayne, who you wrote it with, is now part of Runaway June.
She is.
And now, you know, they're making a run at it right now.
Heck yeah.
So that's the She Don't Love You. I love that song. She's just slow. I play this, so we will do long rides, and we'll take a bus, but if it's within like 4 hours, we'll just grab a van, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, why spend that?
Why not?
Buses cost like $5,000.
They're expensive, man.
Right? For us to take a bus for a weekend, it's how much it costs. So it's like, we'll take it. So Justin the Suit will drive, and he'll drive for like 8 hours at a time.
Yeah.
And I have a playlist of really slow songs.
I'm just picturing Justin the Suit driving
all around.
Oh, dude,
it's crazy.
That
make me sleep.
Hey, pull over for some Big Macs.
Yeah. Well, I don't need Big
Me, you don't eat Big Macs.
You know, I try to stay on the healthy
side of
things.
Hopefully you'll still get the 8 cal.
When my results come back from my test. But I have like REM, Everybody Hurts, Coldplay, She Don't Love You. And like he wants to go to sleep. He's like, dude, you got to give me something upbeat. And I'm like, after I fall asleep, you can change it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, after I pass
like,
out, daddy.
Who let the dogs out?
So I just, I take in my powerful music and fall right to sleep as Justin drives.
There you go. I always say every night before, just because it's like, I don't want people to be depressed after that song. It's, I mean, the point of that song was, you know, I'm the one that broke her heart that much. But the cool thing is people can hear it with the ears they want to. You know, if they're like going through a breakup, like, yeah, she doesn't love you. Ah, screw her.
Speaking of love, you know, and how creative you are. So whenever you were proposing to your current wife now, you create.
My only wife. Yeah,
yeah, yes, your only wife.
Your eighth wife.
Your first wife.
No offense
wife.
To those eight wivers.
So when you proposed, you did something pretty elaborate, right, with the book?
I did, yeah. Look at you, man.
No. I want to hear
you
about
know, all this.
So let me. So it's like it's kind of like a book of us kind of thing, right?
Yeah, Natalie gave. So she gave me this photo album for one of my birthdays, probably 4 years ago. We've been married almost 2 years, a year and a half, 2 years. But and it was just all these photos. We worked together for 5 years before we ever
and you didn't
quote, unquote,
date for a while,
dated.
Right? Because you were
we would sip on a little more whiskey and you know dance a lot closer. Literally dance a lot closer, you know. It's about as far as it went.
But you didn't date
maybe
while you
kissed
were...
kissed a couple times.
Okay, so you did... So did you secretly date?
Ish.
Okay, that's
I
fair.
I would... Not really.
Because I will say that right now...
We didn't secretively date. We just always hung out together, and I would always find something to fix at her house. Like, hey, yeah, it's hinge. It's
so
rusty. I'll come put a new one on it.
Did you both stay single because... You not say, did you both stay in a good place because you knew eventually you would try to be together?
Oh no, we had drama. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's fine. She's an attractive woman. I'm an attractive man.
She's definitely an attractive woman, and you're cool. You're definitely cool. So I'm in that situation now.
Uh-huh.
Don't say anything. Whatever you know, if you know anything, don't say anything. Where it's like for just a bit. Not long, but I had a friend for a long
Isn't
time.
Is that Miss Universe chick?
Yeah.
I knew it.
It is. I've had a friend for a while. We were just friends forever because it was like, I can't date somebody that I work with.
Right.
And so...
What I learned through that is traditions are BS.
You know?
If you love someone, you love someone.
I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't. And I'm saying things right now that I haven't said yet on the radio.
Yeah.
And I just wouldn't do it. And so we just... In the last... month and a half, we just had a talk, and it was like, okay, what are we going to do here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are we going to date or not? And so it looks like we're going to date.
Cool.
I think.
Dig it, man. Let's go on secretive double dates together.
That thing will have to be secret.
Hey, so now
like,
it won't
right
be
now
secret.
It's kind of secret.
Dig it.
But like in 2 weeks, I think in 2 weeks, it won't be secret anymore.
So people are saying you're putting out like pictures of like who I might be dating, and I to myself what I was thinking was like Bobby's just taking random girls he knows and just having different parts of their body show just to confuse people.
Fair.
Did you?
Fair, but no.
Oh,
I didn't.
You didn't. Good fair. job.
But it was the same thing, like this person was a friend for a long time,
right?
And
which is good. That's a good setup.
The best setup.
Yeah,
because I'm terribly afraid of commitment, and so here I am now with someone that I know that like it's just as friends I've like seen the ups and the downs and the middles and the walked in on peeing that kind of stuff all that stuff's happened and so now it's like okay we're gonna try this thing
and she's gotten to see your world too you know and that's like with Natalie and me it's like she's seen me from hey I'm done with my record you know what who's want some songs you know and she went Jason Aldean and I went and wrote a song that
And that's what
like,
your wife...
He never cut it, but he should have. He ended up recording a song that sounded just like it, but it was like... But she realized, wow, he's actually a songwriter.
Explain her job, because you say that, but people don't know what...
Her job at a music publishing company, they sign, like a record deal in a way, they sign songwriters. And we also might want a record deal, to, you know, be singers too. But her job was to... Have the songs come from us, and then she would go, okay, well, I think so-and-so would like this, or whatever artist. So she would go to the label or the manager or the artist or their public, whoever it was that was the right avenue to get the song to them to see if they want to record it or not.
So she would take your songs, because you were signed to where she was working,
yep.
and pitch them to people and
She pitched Barefoot Blue Jean Night to Jake Owen. Renee Bell was the lady at Sony, and she held it for Jake, and Jake ended up loving it and recording it. Barefoot Blue, or Even If It Breaks
Let's
Your
come
Heart.
Around back. Hold on a second. Let's stop with that for a second. I want to get back to this proposal book.
Yeah, okay.
Because we're off track. We'll get back on that train track in a second. So you make this book of what?
Yeah, so it says it's all these pictures from all these years of what I just talked about, of random pictures of us on rider trips or just downtown Nashville or who knows what. And then halfway in the middle, it said to be continued. So I was like, I have an idea.
Oh, she gave that to you.
She gave it to me, but it said to be continued. So what I did was got all the pictures from then on and just started putting them in and had Bible verses and cool just memories and dates and all kinds of cool stuff. She started it. She started putting all that in there. So I continued it and then went and got some foam and some black, really nice black velvet, you know, so she couldn't see that there was something built up in the back. And went up. It was January 3rd, or it was December 30th. Because I didn't want to be cliche and have it like on
New Year's Eve night.
But that's fine too, fellas, if you got to do
it. Not
that.
Really. No, it's not fine. Pick your own day. You know, don't take a day that somebody else has already created.
But the
special.
Other thing
pick
is I'm own. A musician, so I actually have time to like put a book together. But find me one of them wives, mail order wives. But I ran downstairs because I still had to like officially finish it exactly. And I had taken a picture at a Christmas party. My brother took it for me because he was already in on it. Took a picture of us standing in front of the Christmas tree. And so when she turned to the last page, there was a Christmas tree there. And at the very top was the star was a ring. So I had slid the ring down into that foam to where it fit perfectly so it wouldn't fall out. And she didn't know anything funky was going on in the back of the book. So it took you
so
a minute
crappy.
To see it, right,
babe?
You
didn't know it was the ring immediately?
A millisecond, but that's longer. That's long enough for a guy seeing.
It is
wait
long
to propose.
Enough. A millisecond's like a year. You're yeah. So, what was her reaction? Yeah.
She said, "God, you're such a terrible person." But okay, no. It was awesome, priceless.
Yeah. So you've been married almost 2 years now.
Year and a half.
Yeah. What's the key to it at a year and a half?
Loving each other deeply to begin with. And both being understanding and also knowing what you're getting into. It's like she knew that I'm always on the road. Not always, but it's kind of like two different lives. It's like you go out on the road, hang out with all those crazy girls, and then you come back to your wife. No, I'm kidding.
Does distance make the heart grow fonder? Or does it make the heart grow sadder?
I think it, you know, it is weird because it's like I'm on the road and I'm busy all day. So like for her to know exactly what's going on. And I'm terrible at like communicating details. I'm like, so we went to here, then we went to there. Oh yeah. And I also met Garth Brooks or whatever, you know, whatever. But it's, I think it's, I always love going home. And I think when we get to finally hang out for 2-3 days a week, it's really sweet. And we just project, we make all kinds of things together. Today we were building cabinets.
Do you like to build too, Natalie, or do you just kind
of
humor him?
She's a rock star at it.
Oh, no, you like it? You're like a project person. My sister came to town last week, and she and I built like a gigantic linen chest or cabinet into the eaves of a wall while he was on the road.
You guys are like perfect for each other. It's so weird.
And I get to come back and finish up with the details.
The fun part of finishing.
Yeah.
You're just a creator. I mean, you create a lot of things. You know, we're back to music, and you're talking about songs. And so I don't think of it as... Look at all the songs that you've given away because you write songs at different times for different reasons.
Absolutely.
There are some times when it's time to write for yourself and when it's your project time. And there are some times where you just are writing because you're a songwriter as well.
You got to write. You got to swing the baseball bat.
So let's talk about some stuff. So you mentioned Barefoot Blue Jean Night. So who'd you write this with?
Wrote this with Terry Sawchuk and Dylan Altman.
So when you wrote this, it wasn't written... With Jake in mind, you
oh,
guys.
We just wrote it, yeah.
Where were you?
At Cal 4, where I used to write, and the upstairs, it's like they finished out the attic area, so I'd go up there.
So in
made
Nashville.
Me look like a giant, complete giant person.
You are a complete giant, but no, you are a complete giant person. Nothing needs to
meet
make
and greet
you look
lines,
like...
Everyone's like, you're so tall. I'm like, well, I'm only like 4 inches tall on my CD cover, you know?
At least you don't have to take armpits.
Yes.
And that was a conversation with Luke.
I'm grateful for that.
You don't have to take armpits.
Yeah.
So you write this song, Barefoot Blue Jean Night. What did it sound like on the recording? Like if you guys like recorded the demo?
Pretty close to that.
Really?
Pretty close to that. I'll tell you a story on that. Jake is stand-up, awesome dude. He actually changed a couple lines, a couple words, kind of more a couple words in the song. Never asked us to be a writer on it, which, you know, it's...
You guys also have to say yes to that, too.
A lot of times people, well, I haven't had this happen yet, but in theory, sometimes, in a make-believe land... Not called Nashville. Sometimes, you know, people will be like, you know what? I think I need to change your word there. Give me half the song. And you're like, this isn't L.A., man. What the crap?
And you don't
it's just not cool. I would never do that.
You mentioned L.A. Here's the difference. So with songwriting...
All those people are moving to L.A. The good people are moving here from L.A.
That's true. They are moving. A lot of... This is where to move to write.
Yeah.
But so if three people write a song, it's 33, 33, 33. Well, 33.3.
But if it costs like $2 million to buy like a 500-square-foot house, you probably just have to rip off all your friends, I guess. It's less expensive here. Sorry,
In L.A., you can write part of a song and get 10% of a song.
Right.
There are two different kind of songwriting rules. There are Nashville rules. If there are three people in a room, everybody gets a third of the song.
Right.
If you're in L.A., if you contribute 10% and that's what's negotiated, you get 10% of the song.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Wow.
In the two where in this theoretical world, have you heard of stories where people just go sit in a room and don't really add much, but they're in the room and they get writing credit? And this is a universal...
Well,
that just,
one thing I will say, there are some just really good vibey people that somehow, when they step in a room, great songs are written, even if they only said like two words.
I have great vibes.
Like that sounds,
I'm vibey as crap,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, everyone's like, I'm totally moving to Nashville. I got good vibes.
Dude,
everyone knows
I'm
got good
vibey
vibes.
Vibey as a muck,
I'm just
going
to sit there. No, but I mean... That's usually just the off day where it's like you're a great writer and you're just staring at me the whole time. But no, it's it's just a wild process. I mean, we all have our on days and off days. But to get back to it, props to Jake. I mean, he changed what was it? The Never Gonna Up. It was the second verse. It was down. Blue eyes, auburn hair, sitting looking pretty. On the deck by my cousin in a lawn chair, and it was like, by your cousin? Like, are we like... No, we changed that. Natalie, it was like, what the crap? Like, we're not like 12 or incestuous. Your cousin. But by the deck, it was originally on the deck in a lawn chair, and Jake was like, by the fire in a lawn chair, dude. What the crap? That's just better looking. And there it is. New to town, new to me. Ruby Red Lips sipping on CT, sweet tea. That was originally. Shot me a look like a shooting star. Grabbed a beer and my old guitar. So that originally was, I grabbed the keys to my daddy's car. We rode around underneath the stars. Hal and the singer favorite song. I mean, he made it totally fit everyone's scene.
And he didn't come back and go, hey, I'll take a quarter of
that.
He
didn't, you know, and I mean.
Would you have let him?
Props to him. I mean,
would you
knows?
Have let him? Really?
With that amount changed, he just didn't. He's a songwriter. He was like, you know what? Y'all wrote a great song. Here's a cool thing. And he knows on the artist end, he's going to be fine because he's going to get to play the show every night.
That's his biggest song.
As long as he wants.
Like,
you
have Jake Owen's biggest song.
Well, Jake was the messenger, so I thank him
for
getting
it there. Oh, and it fits him perfectly.
Yeah.
It's like you wrote the song for Jake Owen. Is the weird.
It fits.
Did you pick that for Jake Owen, Natalie?
Natalie did. Good job, babe.
I pitched the fire out of that song, and there are some artists in town who would probably be pretty mad if they knew their producer's response.
Oh, so a lot of people turn the song down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so crazy that Jake got it, because that's such a Jake song.
It worked great. You know what is something wild? Jake and Jared Neiman originally did it
They both
sang on it together. And then somehow, I don't know what happened. I actually heard it. It was fun. And it was just like, you know what? I'm just going to keep this for myself.
The label said, this is a Jake song.
Yeah.
Jared, you are a dude, but this is not the time for you to be on a song.
Right.
That's what I was told
by
one of the parties involved.
Yeah.
And so they did record it as a...
Yeah. That was the first recording I heard of it. And I was like, this is fun. Sounds cool.
Who's Frankie?
Huh?
Who's Frankie?
Who knows? It just
made up
good.
The name. Okay,
yeah. But the I will say the lighters in the dark in the middle of a rock show. Before we started writing the song, Dylan Altman, who I love as a brother, we've written together a ton of times, tons of songs together. He was telling us about seeing U2 on the Joshua Tree tour like in 86, 87 at JFK. He's like from Jersey. He's like, man, you turn around, it's like light as in the dock, you know? And it was awesome. And all these lighters and, you know, U2 concert. So we were just, that's kind of where that line came from, shining like lighters in the dark in the middle of a rock show.
Dang, I'll never listen to that song the same. Like, I just learned all of it. It's like I know how to put a car together now. Like, I don't know anything about cars, but I watch it get taken apart, so now I can kind of put it back together.
Okay, but this was my first hit as a writer. You know, this was the first time. And it was, I had signed my record deal, and then the song came out, and it was like, you know, then I put out a song and it didn't work and put out another song. But it was like perfectly aligned. Like God just said, all right, here you go. Here's confidence to know that that you are supposed to be in Nashville. You're supposed to be doing this. And even though the artist thing hadn't quite taken off, but guess what? You're writing songs that people want to record and want to hear and want to sing along to and radio wants to play. And it's just, it was a really, really cool. Just I'll forever be grateful because it changed my course. I never doubted that I could do this, but sometimes you're like, wow, nothing's working right now. You know, I've been writing songs for 4 or 5 years straight and no one's like had success with it yet on radio.
Okay. So that song happens when you get your first check. Is it small?
Yeah. I mean,
it's
the early one. So it was like the 50s and 40s. So like you get like $200, you know,
that's pretty exciting though, right? Like you get a song,
it's amazing.
A check for a song.
You're like, wow, I just got paid and my song was on the radio.
It's only amazing the first time you get that small check, but it's cool for that first time.
It's amazing. And it's, actually the first time I ever got a check from ASCAP, I think it was like for like 58 cents and I'm not even sure. I was like, wow. Yeah, I think
cost
I just
more
kept
postage
I did,
than it did.
It did. It did. And I never even cashed it because, like, why? It's worth more to have it, you know.
What was your next songwriting hit?
So this is wild. The next one was Even If It Breaks Your Heart that same year. So just I had been in town 5 or 6 years at that point. Just getting to know a ton of people and writing and writing and writing, hoping to get a record deal. Wrote this with Will Hoag. He put it on his album, and all his fans loved it. It was kind of like AAA rock, which is very much country now. But and then Eli Young Band got to hear it through Cliff Aldridge, which Natalie pitched the song to Cliff.
You can pitch a song even though an artist has already cut it?
Oh, absolutely. Man.
Okay, cool. All
yeah.
Right.
It happens all the time, man.
I'm going to cut Different for Girls.
Friday night, Lady Antebellum recorded that on the Night album. And then...
Okay, so that's true about Friday night. So this is the number one for you. Yeah. You recorded. Now, if they had went one more single, this was the next single. But they decided not to go any more singles.
Yeah, yeah.
So because they didn't put out a single, you get to take it back. And you got to put it out.
Yeah.
Like, that's like some Angels in This Town kind of stuff
That's a miracle right there. You know, and it allowed my first album to come out, and it allows me to sit here and you to even know about me, you know?
That's not true. We met before I knew any of your songs.
True. You're right.
To be fair.
Just screaming out at the Ford Theater at the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
And Bobby Bones is moving to Nashville, hey.
And it was like, Eric's like, hey, guess where I'm from? And I was like, where are you from? And he was like, I'm from Temple.
Yeah.
And I was like,
oh, you're Jewish?
Because you lived right.
Just an hour northeast of Austin.
Yeah, right where we were, basically. Yeah. And so, yeah, like our first press conference, which was so weird, it seems like 10 years ago. Like, really, it's like 2.5 years ago?
3 years ago.
How long have we been?
3 years.
Is it 3 years?
Yeah,
3 years. It feels like 10
That's
years.
That's insane.
Yeah, it feels there like you 10, go. 10 years ago. Oh, my goodness. It feels like 20
All those beautiful nights together
all these
by the fire.
All these wrinkles I have and gray hairs from this city.
You're
Dang.
Good. They look good on you.
Thank you.
You have gray hair?
I appreciate that.
You don't have gray hair.
I had to cut some out. Look at my sideburns. I got gray in there.
That's cool, man.
It's from all the political crap in this town.
You're fine.
Whatever. I know you. Tell me about this song right here. Love and Theft, Angel Eyes.
Yeah, Angel Eyes. I seriously just saw Eric Gunderson at the airport yesterday morning. A good 6 in the morning. I don't even know when we landed. 7 a.m. Wrote this with him and Jeff Copeland. And
you wrote with Eric?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Oh,
I mean, what are the odds of that? Two giant guys named Eric who both have juvenile diabetes wrote a number one song together.
Eric's a good dude, and Eric's been through a lot. And Eric now is like focused and straight up.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a rough time for a bit. And I got to spend a lot of time with him on the road because we took him out with us for like 8 shows or so, and they opened for us. I really like him.
Good dudes.
Good. Yeah.
He's good. A good guy.
And they're grinders, and they had their up and their way down, and now they're working their way back up.
Yeah.
And you root for people like that.
Absolutely.
So, okay, so you have that. All right, so let's talk about.
But what's wild, all those hit in 1 year. Like, I actually got
that's
a,
all,
I got
all
a
those
CMA,
happened in 1 year?
I got a CMA Triple Play Award. That means you had 3 number ones in 1 year. So I didn't have any hits.
Holy
as a writer
crap.
Or
and
a singer.
3 in a year.
And had a record deal and had, you know, everyone rooting for me. And then all of a sudden the dam broke. You know, all these songs and all these songs that Natalie had pitched and just hopefully people would latch on to. And
did you pitch Angel Eyes to a lot of other people? Or was it picked up immediately?
Actually, I set up the co-write with Eric and Jeff. And Jeff brought Eric Gunderson in at the last second. And...
You want me to tell the story? I was like,
he played it, and he was like, I mean, it's a cool song, but it's not true. There's no devil in an angel's eye.
And then I was like, but maybe angel. Dark angels, but she's not. She's a good angel. I mean, I was just getting all, like, spiritual, yeah, like, it's fine.
So he didn't love it at first.
He didn't love the song.
That's so funny.
And I cracked and went, well, you know it's going to be a number one song. Now you have to play it the rest of your life.
Yeah, and here we are. I love the song to death.
But at that time.
So you wrote it before the other, but it hit. They all hit at the same time, but it took you.
But they always. I was always told, and I always tell people now, it's like, don't write what's on the radio because it's probably at least 2 years old. Like it was written 2 years ago, but it takes about that much time for it to get demoed and then pitched.
So Eric said he didn't like this. That's so funny that he didn't like this song.
I mean, at the time though, I was writing like 1 to 3 songs a day. So I'm like, I don't know anymore. You know, this sucks.
How many songs do you have on hold right now?
I have no
clue. If you had to guess. More than 10?
I don't know. Sure. I don't know. Well, this is the wild thing. I'm on the road so much now, singing what I've wanted to do, and also wanting to write, but it's like it takes so much to carry one song, you know, as an artist and as a singer, and so I don't get to write as much. Now when I get to write, it is with, like, Lady Antebellum or whoever it is that I get
to write
with.
It's so hard to book a write. It's hard. You don't let anybody write with them, right? You block everybody?
I block a lot of days because Eric needs some time home. Not so much I'm trying to block people, but we definitely, he has such little time to write that we definitely try to put him in rooms where he'll be successful and not be tired at the end.
So why would you send him over to do Potty Party and When I Grow Up?
Because that's fun.
Because I take.
It's renovating, man. I just wrote a song about not pissing your pants, babe.
That's right. You did. That's right.
Uh-oh.
It's so fun to play live, too, man.
Do you realize how many band members need to have that song? I mean, there's some wild people on the road.
Adults love that song. So, okay, let's talk about
brought
this.
To you by Depends.
You're on the song with Charles Kelly.
Yeah.
But you also wrote this, right?
Wrote The Driver with him and Stoklasa.
And you got a Grammy nomination for this thing, right?
We totally got a nomination for. I can't even talk.
You call it a
Nami
if you're cool? Should I start saying that?
Totally got a Nami.
Is that really a term?
I just made it up.
Oh, okay.
It really was wild. And this was the first time as an artist I'd been nominated as a Grammy. We got a Nami. Got a Nami for a Grammy.
I'm going to start saying that now. Yeah. You got 3 Nami's.
Let me tell you. But the first was for Even If It Breaks Your Heart for Song of the Year, a country song.
So you've got 2 Grammy nominations.
Crazy, man. I've been nominated for a few things. It's cool.
I'm a dreamer. Listen, I got
there
right there.
I am.
There he is.
Some good tone. Proud of this song, man. It's just a tip of the hat to all the people, the crew, the bus drivers, to everybody that gets us there. Everyone that you don't see, I call all those people behind the walls of Oz. It's like everyone just wants to pretend that Oz just appears, this giant emerald city in a field of poppies, and you don't realize how much work and how many people are there day in and day out building a career. And then you show up and for 45 minutes or an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, 4 hours, if you go to see Springsteen, you know, that how much effort it goes into it. Like what you, I mean, you share just like with your role in sharing music you love, you know, with people so they know to come see the show. And it's, this song is just a shout out to all those people that build it. All of us on the stage, just all the singers that we, you know, pour our whole lives into this. And then the fans that pour their lives into it, you know, like coming 5 hours early just to stay on the front row to wait to see it. It's pretty amazing.
How important in your life is faith to you?
It's everything to me. I'm smart enough to know I could just stay at home. And that being said, you still have to be blessed and lucky enough to get songs recorded. But I love writing songs, but I love sharing songs with people that I don't think others would necessarily share. And I don't make it easy on myself in that way. But I don't know. I've never doubted that I was on the wrong path that God had sent me on to go like, all right. This is what's wild. I've gotten to hang out with so many juvenile diabetics lately. Just doing these angel visits, going to hospitals and going like, hey, there's this kid just got diagnosed. We just go get encourage him, you know, and just get to meet all these juvenile diabetics. And we get to do all this fundraising for JDRF and all that. And up until I was 18, I thought I was going to be a doctor for that, to be a diabetic doctor, an endocrinologist, and specifically pediatric endocrinologist for kids that have been diagnosed with diabetes. And it's wild how God is taken that career that never happened, and now with music, it's like merging it all together right before my eyes. It's like I'm getting to raise money for what I, you know, something I believe in, to help kids with diabetes, and you know, I have it too, so it's relatable to when I see them and go, hey man, you know, take care of yourself. Don't you feel better when you test your blood and you know where you're at, you know? And I also tell everybody, it's like we could have been born 100 years ago and died from this, you know. And, but it's, my faith tells me that what I believe in is true, because God's just somehow brought music and another calling that I thought I was going to do. And now it is, you know, juvenile diabetes, together somehow. And even so much more, getting to just help a lot of people and let kids know it's okay to do good stuff. You don't just have to be ridiculous online to be famous.
Do you feel like God put you on earth for a reason?
I think he put all of us on earth for a reason.
Why did God put you on earth?
Hopefully to glorify him and let people look up towards him, not be misled about who he really is or jaded to his love because someone used his name not for the right reason, you know? And, I hope that whenever the time comes when I'm not here anymore, people go, you know what? God used him to bring me closer to God.
I was talking to Garth.
Not in like a, that's just what I believe. No, in. Not for me. And that's totally not looking at me.
I wonder, and I know you're such faith-based, and I've met your parents, who are awesome, by the way.
They're fun people.
And they were missionaries.
Nomads right now. They freaking sold their house. They're in an RV just cruising around America.
They are?
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
But for them, though, like they've lived in some pretty cool places, right?
Yeah. Well, my dad was a telephone man, like, for 30 years. He worked for Southwestern Bell, so he was a manager, and we were the first to have caller ID in all of Bell County.
Dang, caller ID was crazy when it came out.
They'd call me, and I'd be like, hey, Carson, what's going on?
You were the first one to have caller ID in your town?
Totally. And the whole county,
you had to be the coolest, because when it came out, it revolutionized life.
We were maybe even the first in Austin area. It was so cool.
If you're below, like, 25 right now, you have no idea how caller ID changed our lives.
Yeah, used to you had to answer every call.
And really answer, this is what I hate to, you had to answer it with the question, hello?
Hello?
And people still do that now, and I'm like, you know it's me.
You know it's me.
You just say, hey.
Strange person.
Yes.
But yeah, so he worked with Southwestern Bell, worked there 30 years. He was in the Navy, electrician, so it fed into being in the telephone company with all those wires running everywhere.
This all makes sense to me, and, like your creation.
Yeah, he showed me how to wire up stuff. So that's why I'm not afraid to do electrical work or build things. We built a lot of stuff together.
The creative part of you, the faith-based part of you, like it all kind of makes sense. It's all the puzzle that's slowly
falling together,
getting put together.
Yeah.
So when did they decide to be missionaries?
So we had a neighbor that was from Thailand across the street, and my mom and her were good friends. And then we had a lady named Ong Sanah come over from, she was a, I thought she was like they're like, oh, she's a teacher in Bangkok. Turns out she's like the head honcho principal at the best school in Bangkok. So she came and lived with us for 2 or 3 months. She was studying at a college there. And so I knew this sweet little woman that would like make the most incredible Thai food I've ever had in our kitchen. I was probably a senior in high school then. And, so my dad retired and it was like, hey, we know people in Thailand and let's go. And they went for 6 months and it ended up being like 6 years. They speak fluent Thai.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing. And the coolest thing is, or for me, the coolest thing about that was, is I got to get out of the American bubble. I like got to go around the world and go, this really isn't that way. You know, like the world is pretty small.
Yeah.
And the whole scheme of things now. And to go, I don't know what that guy just said to me, but I know he's my friend.
It's
you know?
Crazy that you say that because I've only just discovered that in like the last 2 to 3 years.
Uh-huh.
I never went anywhere.
You've been
in my
traveling
life.
A bunch of cool places, man.
Yeah, in the last 2 years. Because, I grew up in Arkansas. I didn't go on vacation. We had any money.
Yeah.
We had to eat. We didn't go on vacation. Yeah. We had to get school clothes. We didn't go on vacation.
Same here as a kid. We hopefully got like one vacation a year. So I got spoiled with that. I remember you got to go with your buddies.
I did. I went to Colorado once. My buddy's parents paid for it.
Yeah.
And so.
Very cool.
Now, I've never been out of the country. But I went to London a year and a half ago. And I went by myself just to see. Went for a couple of days, right?
Yeah.
And so I go and I'm like, okay, this is, it's really not that far away.
Nope.
And then I went to Japan. And that's the other side of the world. And even as I'm there and we speak nothing the same, the people part of it is still the same.
Yep.
If not, they're kinder than us.
Right.
Like, I was just like, wow. Like, they're actually more loving than... Like, it was, yes, even though it's the other side of the world, it was like, we're all just still kind of the same kind of thing. I went to Iceland. It was amazing. They're the nicest people. Like, everybody's nicer than us. That's kind of what I've determined. Everywhere you go, they're nicer than we are in the States.
Well, they're just, you know, just afraid of you. Because they're Bobby Bones. Be nice to Bobby Bones.
I got on the subway, and I felt like, in Japan, I was a giant. I was you here. I get to feel what I was like, man. I'm like Eric Paisley
when
I was in Japan because I was taller than everybody.
Started singing, sounded great.
I sounded great. Yeah, I mentioned Garth a minute ago because he said before he dies, the last song you wanted to hear was the dance. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And he almost didn't cut the dance. And I was talking to him about it, and I said, hey, so tell me about the dance. And he's like, listen, I was then the guy that wasn't country. I was then. The guy shouldn't be on the radio because this is not what country
Look
is.
Look at that hooligan swinging from the ropes on his stage. What's he doing?
That he was not going to cut the dance at all because it wasn't country enough. Like that song was not country. And had Steve Reynolds not come to him and said, dude, if you don't cut this song, you will regret it. And he said it was because that's the only reason he cut the dance.
Incredible song. Well, think about that. They're just the piano part at the beginning. Nobody was doing that, you know?
And it's what's happening now, too. And my grandma would tell me about it because Johnny Cash is from Arkansas. If you're from Arkansas, you look up to everybody from Arkansas that's made it out. She would say people would protest Johnny Cash concerts because he wasn't country. He was rock and roll.
Right.
And how do people not see the cycle that happens over and over and over and over and over
country's
and over
never
and
country.
Over and over again?
Yeah, always.
Like, it's happened 80 times, yet everyone thinks this time is the wrong time.
Right. No, I always say... you know, Hank Jr. in country, his daddy was, you know, and Willie's just some hippie from Texas, you know, God forbid. And I know that when Kenny Rogers and Dolly sang Islands in the Stream, like hell froze over. And it's like, then you go back and you go, oh, you know what? You know, it's like you listen to Cruz, like Florida Georgia, you're like, that's a pretty dang good song. That's as country as it can be right now.
But when it came out, everyone was like, oh, my world is shaking.
And that was only like 3-4 years ago. So it really is, I mean... People are afraid of change, and music is always changing because if it didn't, we'd get really bored with it. You know,
it would die.
And if
with
you
the
never
people.
Wanted something new, there'd only be the one song ever played. I mean, it's a bummer that people. I mean, it's just it's scary when things change.
Yeah, and that's but all here, right. But if it stayed the same, it would die with the people who loved it.
It would.
And the newer generations that's being influenced by 90 different things would not attach themselves to it, and it would just go away.
Right.
I don't think people understand.
Mm-hmm.
It frustrates me.
Yeah.
I mean, that really gets under my
skin. But the wild thing, though, is like what's new was what was old. You know, and it's just and this cycle.
It's all a cycle. Clothes, yeah. Music, everything.
Well, I was just thinking like Adele, Amy Winehouse. I mean, it's British chicks singing what Aretha Franklin did.
And 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Yeah, with current lyrics and incredible voices, you know. But it's we started covering an Adele song on the road.
I know. I saw it on Snapchat.
It's fun.
Yep. It's
what song? Really freaking people out, man. Not really.
What song is it?
Set Fire to the Rain.
Yeah. How's it? That's so good, you're on the road now.
Yeah.
You're out.
Angels in This Town tour. I love the song so much. We decided to call the whole tour Angels in This Town tour.
All right. Let's talk about this song. I love this song. It's a song about a girl. Song about a girl.
Yeah. Natalie was in this video.
Natalie was in the video. That's right.
We weren't even engaged yet.
So you were just dating. Were you secretly dating or were you dating?
Oh,
dating?
No. People knew we were dating.
Okay, so then you were dating.
Oh, yeah.
There was a time, though, where people couldn't know you were dating.
We pretty much just, I mean, we would secretively hang out-ish.
So you secretly dated.
It was bizarre, yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it. Song about a girl. I'll talk about it for a second.
It was strange. And it's perfect.
Tell me about this song.
So, yeah, you're saying sometimes I'm ahead of it. The thought was, you know, the original thought was everybody's singing about tailgates. Like, they're not sexy. It's only the chick sitting in it that's sexy, you know, and like the water tower. The water tower is the most boring, ugly thing in our town. But if my girlfriend's name's on it, now that's a song about a girl, you know. You're not drowning a bottle of Jack unless you're getting over her, you know, or finding the guts to ask her out. So we were, you know. We were slightly being smart, going like, it's not about a tailgate or a bonfire. It's about the girl, bro. You know? And that's what this song is about. And I just thought, this is the coolest sound and track on my first album. You know, as far as just attitude and cool.
Which, by the way, I just moved into a new house. And we have a new studio set up. There are people in my... Oh, man, so long 3 years that I've been here. Holy crap, it's been a long 3 years. But there are people that I've attached to as people. And... In my business and what I do, you get a lot of stuff thrown at you from me, and like people are like, "Hey, my best friend. Hey, here's some free stuff. Hey, here's a plaque. Hey,
so
whatever."
I don't give you more free stuff.
No, I don't want it. I don't want it at all. Like, that's the opposite of what I want.
I'm terrible at giving.
But I
gifts,
only
man.
Keep like this is a room. I only have 6 things up in this room, and it's because of Kelsey Ballerini. I have her first number one plaque because I mean.
She's kicking butt, man.
She's
great.
Killing it now. But I remember Kelsey before she had a record deal.
Yeah.
I knew Kelsey when she was just signed as a writer.
Yeah.
I knew Kelsey the Christmas party when she got offered a record deal. And then she came to me like, "I'm going on a radio tour. What do I do for advice?" And then we took her out on our first tour and she cried. And I went back and I was like, "Listen, Kelsey, you're going to screw up in much bigger places than this.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to screw up in such big places. Don't worry about Kansas and Raging Idiot show." Like, that's the Kelsey that... I started with.
Yeah.
So I have a plaque of Kelsey's first number one.
It's awesome.
Girl Crush from Little Big Town was just a song on the record that should have never been played, ever. And it should have never been played. I got in so much trouble.
Natalie played me that song the day after it was written.
The morning after.
Really?
The morning after.
Who sang the demo?
Hillary
Lindsay?
Lori were both on it.
Lori McKenna.
They all hole up at Liz's house.
Yeah, the Love Junkies. They've told the story. Yeah.
They all just,
I had them on the show as writers, and I don't have writers in their office. I love Lauren McKenna so much.
They're amazing.
Like, she's awesome.
Yeah.
And anytime we go to Boston, yeah, whoever's like in the band,
yeah,
like Natalie Stovall or Lindsay L, whoever, they'll go write with her while they're in Boston.
Go hang out with.
So I have a Little Big Town from their because Girl Crush sold, but that was a song that I heard on the record while they were still
Day Drinking
was trying to be number one.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Gosh, you have to hear Girl Crush."
Yeah. I told Natalie, though, I said, this is the only time, and at the time, no radio was not playing girls at all. It was before the Tomatoes thing that let girls in. It was, that's a whole other story. You know that. But, I said, this is the only time I wish I was a girl in country radio right now, because I'd totally cut this.
But the thing was, it was so awful for so long, because first of all, I played it and I got in trouble. because I had station managers yelling at me because I was playing a lesbian song.
Right.
And so I put, but it went to number one on iTunes. And so I could at least show them data.
And like, it wasn't a lesbian song. Look at this. I guess if you want it, it could be one, I guess, but it's not really.
And if you have data, you can always point to it. And I'm like, people are spending their own money on this song. So what they did is they tested it. My company spent money testing me talking about it to see if our listeners were turned off and changed the channel by it.
Yeah.
I got into so much trouble over it. I had a friend that works with the Washington Post.
Yeah.
Article was written, whatever. History happens. Boom. That song's like the biggest song.
Blows up.
Huge so I keep song. A plaque up of that. And then I have four records by four different friends. And they're vinyl records. Chris Jansen, who is just a solid dude. Yep. Like you talk about a guy that has been through some rough times and come out the other side of it. Mm-hmm. Like, if that dude needed my pinky, I would cut it off and say, here's the pinky. I know you need one.
Yeah.
So I got Jansen, a record, Urban, who's always been so kind. Like, things I don't even talk about. Yeah. Like, he's so kind.
Keith. He played on Dressed in Black, the title track on the album that's waiting to come out someday.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And he, you know what? That sounds like, he's just like, what do you want me to do? I'll do whatever you want, Bobby. I'm in town. Hey, where are you? And he like sends me, like, he's been probably the most secretive friend that I have because I'm like, he never asks for anything.
No.
He just, he's cool. I have a Marin record.
He has Nicole. He doesn't need
That's
anything.
Right. And who is also this so nice.
She's super nice.
She is, like, she's like, the kids and I listen to you every morning that we're in town. And I'm like, is this for real? You're Nicole Kidman. Stop talking to me. This is weird. So, and then I have a Marin because we would steal music off the internet from Marin and play it on the radio before she
She's awesome.
Was Marin, before she was five-time CMA nominated Marin. Yeah. And then I have an Eric Pasley.
There I am.
There he is. Those are the six things that I have up on the wall in this room. Six people that I'm like, you know, those are my
Thanks
people.
For including me, buddy.
Well, you'd be probably the first one. You and Kelsey are like the first.
There we go.
So chronologically.
That's why I'm at the bottom. Not really. I'm not at the bottom.
Not at the bottom. Talk about this one here.
Never Really Wanted, my very first single. And I just thought it sounded cool, you know, and was like, maybe chicks will be intrigued by this. You don't want me? Oh, now you do? Yeah, you do. You know.
Did you get any music for girls?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you do.
Yeah.
I mean, I always talk about it. I was like, do you think the coolest kid in school, this is what I always think. It's like, and this is for the coolest kid in school also to remember to keep reaching. It's like if you're the coolest kid in school, you don't have time to go to your bedroom and pick up a guitar by yourself and write a really slow love song and hope your parents don't hear you writing a song, you know, or figuring out how to play guitar. And it's, you know, I think, you know, like Steven Tyler, he just always got made fun of. He's like, everybody always made fun of my lips, you know, and all this and that. And I got made fun of in school. And I mean, Mick Jagger, I mean, he probably got made fun of. You just think of Tom Petty. I don't really see those as being like the you're the homecoming king. And
but
that being
never,
said, if you are,
it's never
don't the, forget the, to keep reaching. But it's
the, but why
but
reach?
Yes,
if you have everything?
But we all did it for girls. Absolutely,
yes, all
we're
of
all
us.
Low life scallywags.
No, we're not low life. You know, we just never got girls.
We never got.
We
girls.
Never got girls, and
dude.
We,
man,
and we
being
watched
a lanky
guys
redhead,
around us be, yeah. get girls made us drove us. To do what we do.
Yeah. Still waiting on that.
And that's it. Yeah, you'll get there, buddy.
Okay.
We got a few
you'll
years on
fine.
You.
You'll be fine.
Talk about this one for a second, because I haven't played this one yet. This is Rascal Flatts Rewind.
Yeah. Wrote it with Ashley Gourley and Chris DiStefano. And they didn't do one thing on their recording that took me like 30 minutes to finally do. So I sang Rewind. And then we reversed it, and it was like, near-where, or something just ridiculous. So I sang it backwards, and then we flipped it back, so it sounded like, it was like, rewind, to where it was just ridiculous. So
this
basically,
I'm talking about. You know
basically
how earlier I was like,
I
Eric
wanted
is,
to sing it
Eric
backwards.
Is smarter than everybody else.
So then
else.
We flipped it over, so it was literally me singing it in rewind, but then it sounded like rewind. And the guys, the look on your face is the exact look Gary LaVox gave me. Like, you did what? And why?
No.
Could you have just sang, rewind, you know?
And they didn't do what you...
I don't think they even realized that. They're like, God, that was a weird... He was really jittery there. He was sipping on some
they did,
sweet tea.
They did what?
We need to send you the demo.
Yeah, we'll send you the demos.
Who thinks of that to actually go, I'm going to sing it backwards so I can play it?
I had an extra 20 minutes before my next co-write, and they're like, oh, let's try it.
That's crazy.
Ashley left long before. He's like, I got to go. And so, Chris was like, fine, we'll do it. But no, I love writing with those guys. We just wrote another hit. Who knows? It'll find its home somewhere.
I just saw and talked to Chris DiStefano for right like 45 minutes the other night. Like, I don't know a lot of people that aren't that on the surface, mm-hmm. you know. But I've gotten to know a few because I'm like one of my dearest friends is Lee Miller, Lee Thomas Miller, as a writer. Like one of my,
he cares.
I'll go to his house and have dinner, friend. Like that's he's like such a, and he wrote for those that are listening, and we're gonna have him in here sometime soon. But he wrote In Color from Jamie Johnson. Mm-hmm. He wrote like a ton of Brad Paisley stuff. Like he's wrote, you know, big songwriter, but even better human, better dude. So Lee was like, hey, come play a songwriter round with me. And I'm like, okay, I'll play a couple of funny songs, whatever. So I get up. I don't know what I'm doing, right? It's during, what's a songwriter fest called?
Tin Pan South.
Okay. I don't even know what it is, right? This is how clueless I am. He's like, hey, we're doing this thing at Tin Pan South. Are you in town? And I happen to be in town. It was like one of the Thursday, Friday, Saturdays that I was in town.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I can play with you. I'll play. Like, he's like, you play like four songs. And I'm like, okay. Okay, that's not really my thing to get up by myself and do music. I do stand-up comedy, and I add music to it. Yeah. Or I get a big band, and we play our songs. So I get up, and he's like, hey, a couple other guys are going to show up and play, whatever. I'm like, cool, whatever. So I get up, and it's Lee to the left, and it's me. And sitting beside me, it's Chris DiStefano, who has written 100 songs.
He's written a bunch of hits, man.
Like, he did Carrie Underwood, Something in the Water.
Yeah.
And he sang it, and he sang it as good as Carrie Underwood can sing it.
He's a pretty good singer.
And next to Chris was Ashley Gourley. So it's a four-person, and Ashley Gourley's written just recently. He wrote with Dan and Shay, and he wrote From the Ground Up.
Yeah.
He wrote Cole Swindell, You Should Be Here with Cole. Like, these guys are, and so it's Lee, Chris DiStefano, Ashley Gourley, and me.
Yeah.
Now, which one doesn't belong of that four? No, it was me. The fact that Chris was so kind to me, and I saw him. I went to Kelsey's. I've been to two number one parties in my life: Kelsey's first number one song and Kelsey's last number one song. And Chris was there wearing a Pimp of Joy hat, and I was like, "Dude, did you know I was coming?" And he was like, "No, I had no idea." And so,
by the way, I see Pimp of Joy hats in the crowds all the time. I'm like,
"Do you really?
Good job.
That's cool. Yeah. That's awesome." But good dude, Chris Stefano's a good dude, and you wrote that with him and Ashley.
I did.
Those are my co-players. Yeah,
we go. That's the only song. We've only written two songs together, the one I was just talking about and this one. So I was like, hey, we just wrote another really good song. We wrote it about a month ago. I was like, well, maybe we'll keep batting 1,000. We'll see. That means you're hitting the baseball perfectly.
What? I think most people
just in
know.
Case, yeah. You know.
So this album that you talked about, what's it going to take for like this thing to happen?
Faith.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
I got to have faith in listeners and faith in radio to play me.
Don't never have faith in radio.
Oh, I still got to have faith in them. Mm-hmm. I know that they want to play great music. They will.
Oh, man. Whatever. I guess I can be frustrated for you.
I'm frustrated, but I understand that energy is worth wasting.
It's not good for business to be upset.
Oh, if you want to get uninspired... We were my good friend. We were talking about it. I said at the beginning, it's like you got to plant and water. The moment you try to start making something grow that you literally don't have the power to do is when you get jaded. So I don't want to start trying to like push green leaves out of the ground that I'm not capable of doing. I can, I could fabricate it, but that's not the person that I am. You know, and that's you'd like to fabricate it, it'd be great for me. No, I'm
punch a horse in the face.
Right? I shouldn't do that. I like horses.
Did punch a horse?
No, he stole a horse. He didn't punch a horse.
Okay, well, Kenny actually saying, stole punch a horse.
Oh, that'd be awful.
He stole a cop's horse, right?
I like horses. Yeah, he stole... Well, it's a whole long story. He was actually apparently flirting with the sheriff's daughter who had the horse and said, yeah, sure, you can ride it. So he got on it, and then the other sheriff saw him like, get off, and they pulled him down, and then Tim McGraw saw it. I'm probably making all that. But basically, that was... It was a big ordeal. But yes, I need to go steal a horse. No, I shouldn't punch a horse.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you'd just punch anybody.
Yeah. I need to accidentally steal a horse. Quote unquote. No, I mean, it really is funny. I need to go do something ridiculous.
But not bad.
I'd be like, hey, no, not bad. No.
But you know what's weird?
Entertaining.
Here's the weird thing. Like for me, you have to do your philanthropic stuff for yourself. It has to like fill your own heart.
Yeah.
Because people don't, people don't care.
They do.
Like I do it.
Gosh darn it.
I do it because it makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. Because if it wasn't for other people helping me growing up, I wouldn't be in this spot right now. So I feel like it's my job to give back what was given to me. Mm-hmm. I just would not be here without the help of my youth director at church, my head football coach, these people in my life that came out of nowhere and helped me get from point A to wherever I am now, maybe point L, maybe this is point Z. I don't know where I am in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I give back, for no other reason. And if it was for any other reason, then it just isn't effective. Your heart's really not into it in the right way. But here's the thing. People don't care about that. People care about tabloid covers.
Yeah.
So that's why when people are like, hey, I'm like, you do philanthropic stuff for your own. Like other.
I will be on the cover of Playgirl coming up. Did you see that?
That doesn't even, I don't think exist anymore. God,
do they not? Dang.
I don't think so. But you can bring it back. You could say you were hacked and put a picture of your, you know, and then that would make.
I was hacked.
And that
Dang
would,
it.
That would make the news.
Yeah, nobody would believe
but
that.
But it's, you know, you do so much and you do it for you. And that's what's great. The weird thing is, unless you're, again, punching a horse or cheating on your wife, or nobody cares about that stuff. That's what's weird. That's
a bummer, man.
That's what's weird about in Iceland or Japan or London.
I think the people that speak up don't care about it. The people that enjoy it are just the people living their lives and working hard most of the time. But we still all want to be entertained. But I still believe that people don't always want to hear bad news.
People like good news now.
They still like good news.
Because there's so much bad news.
Yeah, it's like over-consuming of bad news.
Our strongest segment is Tell Me Something Good.
Yeah.
And we do it every day. Tell Me Something Good. People don't even know that's a real song. People don't even know that's a Chaka Khan song.
It's totally a song.
And people are like, I heard your jingle at the grocery store.
I heard your jingle.
I'm like, no, that's a real song. We've been doing that segment for 12 years, right?
Yeah.
And we do it every day.
Good job.
And no, not good job. Because some days I'm like, I'm so tired of this. But then I remember what it brings to people.
Yeah.
Like, everybody doesn't do it every day. I hear it every time. Like me, I hear it every single time. I record it every single time. So sometimes I'm like, on a Tuesday, I'm like, do I got to tell more good? Yeah. How about tell me something funny? How about tell me something bad?
Yeah.
But I got to remember.
Tell me something bad. Yeah.
You got to keep putting it out there. And it really is a good thing.
Gotcha.
It really is a good thing. You're a good dude. I appreciate you just kind of sharing your life story. Man, it's crazy. Like you have a book in you.
Yeah, it's written every day.
You have a book in you.
We'll get there. I still got a lot more songs to put out there before I start, you know, showing people behind the curtain too far.
Here's the Lady A version of Friday Night that they didn't put out as a single. Crazy.
Pretty wild. Yeah.
Thank goodness they didn't put that as a single.
And that's the wild thing. It's like planting water. That wasn't up to me that they didn't put it out. I wanted them to put it out. I was like, please put out the single. And I was bummed about it. You know, I was like, God, it's a bummer. They put out like all ballads. And I was the only up-tempo on the whole album. And they didn't put it out. And there you go.
The thing is, you just never ever know.
You never know.
That's the great thing. You wake up every day, there are a million possibilities.
Yeah.
I've been fined $1 million. I've won ACM awards. I've been on both spectrums. And both those days, I didn't know either one was going to happen.
Yeah.
And tomorrow, I get fired. Tomorrow, I get a TV show.
You getting fired?
I could.
I'm kidding.
Very easily. I almost got fired when I got fined $1 million. Like, that was a really...
That was some intense stuff, man.
Like, I got fined seven... There's only been a few of us that have been... Like, there's a club of people who have been fined over $1 million by the FCC.
Yeah.
I'm in the club. It's
good
an awful...
Job.
No!
Well,
it's
guess
an awful
what?
Club to be in. It made me miserable.
You got to, you know, punch something.
Here's the end of it. No, here's the end of the story.
You stole a horse.
It made me reappreciate every single thing, and it reset me. Because I was out of control a bit.
Yeah.
And it was like, back. I almost think it was on purpose. Like some weird thing said, okay, I'm going to grab you by the collar. And I'll make you understand and appreciate who you are and where you came from.
Yeah.
Boom. Set me right back down in that chair. And it was like, okay, it just reset my life. And it was like, okay, I can't be this, what I was starting to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
I think even musically right now, I remember when I recorded Friday Night. I was at a place I never really wanted, didn't work. Fish Don't Bite didn't work. That whole album that we had really was 4 or 5 years old at the time. that they were promoting of mine. And I was like, you know what? And there's pictures of me, this big old beard. I just grew it out because I didn't care anymore. I was like, doesn't matter what I look like right now. I'm just going to make some music that I love and all of that. And I think I'm definitely back in that spot. It's like people always tell you what they think a hit is, but ultimately they just want the side effect of a hit. It's up to us to just create great music, fun music, and you to play. Thank you.
Yeah, it's all on me. Great.
Only on you.
As we wrap this
up. I hear the outro music.
You do hear the outro music. As we wrap this up, when you moved to Nashville and you went to college.
I'd like to thank the Academy for the honor. Exactly.
You moved to Nashville to study music. With what goal in mind?
Went to school to study music business with the goal of getting to stick around and doing what I do now.
What jobs did you have to get by just so you could eat?
I valeted. I worked at Starbucks. And that I park almost every car and make almost every latte again.
Would you ever park a car of any country music superstar and be like, oh, man, I want to be that guy?
I totally want to leave a cassette in their car, man. No, I parked a bunch of big songwriters that I get to write with now. And I'm
really?
Like, hey, you were really nice. You actually tipped me like $1.
That's cool. $1. Eric Pasley, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Bobby.
Hope you've enjoyed this as much as
I've
I have.
I've had a good time. I hope everybody had a good time listening to us talk about ourselves.
That's true.
It was good.
The good thing about a podcast is I can stop it and start it, stop back. Start
you
back.
Can listen to all the good parts.
How often do you get to do an hour straight interview and talk about everything and fully get it, the whole story out there?
If only we had 5 hours.
If only, yeah. We true. Can. Eric Pasley, hey, download Angels in This Town. If Eric's out, go see him live. He's on the Angels in This Town tour right now. How long is that going to last? To
the middle of December. And then we'll see. We might carry it into next year.
Go see him. He's a good dude. And thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
The episode, what episode is this?
15.
Episode 15 is over. Thank you to everyone. And thanks to our sponsor, Blue Apron. By the way, you ever had Blue Apron?
I have not yet.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Have I? Yes, I have. No, I haven't.
No, listen. They send you a whole box of stuff. You wouldn't do it. You cook like crazy. And it's all the stuff's in there already in perfect portions. And you look like a master chef.
We kind of have that.
Oh, well, good.
It's really good.
Well, Blue
Maybe
Apron.
Maybe we do.
And you go to blueapron.com/BobbyMeals and get a deal. Do you know that?
Heck yeah.
You should go after this is over.
I'm hungry.
All right. All right, got to go. Thank you, guys. See you next time. Bye.